Take your Bibles and turn to 2nd. Oh, let's see here. I've got to get my Bible. 2nd Samuel. And Pastor John, I got up to chapter 18, the latter part. So we're going to pick up where he left off. And we're going to deal with some verses then in chapter 19 as well. Now, David, of course, is down in Mahanaim. And that's where his camp is. He's already waged war. He's won the war. He doesn't know it yet. The messengers are coming. The first one has delivered a message, and John dealt with that. And I have a little bit of a different take on David and what he's doing. I believe this. By reading, and I spent some time looking at not just the passages I'm going to deal with tonight, but the beginning of this whole thing. There are some things that, to me, knowing the character of David, and when we're studying these characters, you know, we have to suppose some things. We have to read some things in. I'm not psychoanalyzing him, but at the same time, David is a king. He's very confident in God and in his ability. We know that from reading the Psalms. We get a lot of comfort from them ourselves. But in my opinion, David, when he left, even though he told his servants, we're going to flee. I don't know how many of you have ever seen a killdeer. I know I grew up out in the country and the little killdeers would run. And get out in front of you, and they would feign like they were hurt. And you might feel sympathetic toward them, or you might try to pick them up, and then they would feign they were hurt. Robins will do this, too. I think I've seen them in my own backyard from time to time. They're very territorial. And they will feign like they're hurt sometimes, and just, you know, they'll let you get just close enough, and then they will hop away. And to me, that's what David is doing. Even though he left and told all of his servants that they were fleeing, he still took time to set up the house and get some ladies to take care of the house for him while I was gone. But a couple of reasons why I think it's kind of a strategy. And I think David is very self-confident. I think he knows that Absalom is his enemy. I mean, in the scriptures, it said 40 years Absalom was in the process of working out this rebellion and getting this following. So there's a period of time there. I don't think David was unaware of what was going on. Wouldn't know the time frame necessarily, but when it came, I think he was ready for it. And like any military man, he probably had a plan in mind. And I believe John mentioned the fact that he took them and his followers down to Mahanaim because that's good battleground for him. That's what he was used to fighting in the wilderness. But I think as well, Jerusalem was the city of David. When Israel came in and defeated the Jebusites, they burned it. And David had built it. His own house was there. The tabernacle was there. Not the temple yet, but the tabernacle was there. And I believe David was confident enough that he knew he was going to whip Absalom, even with the small faction that he had. But he didn't stay in the city. He didn't want the city destroyed. His own home was there. Didn't want the city necessarily destroyed over this little skirmish that he was going to have. I don't necessarily think that he fled out of fear, but rather like that little bird will hop away from you and lead you away from his nest. I think David was leading Absalom to where he would choose, where we would fight, the ground we would be on. And that's where we find him. Only the battle is over. And of course, David does not know that yet. So, just my take on it a little bit. The fortifications were in Jerusalem. So I'm trying to, you know, get in David's head a little bit and think a little bit like him. So I don't know how much you do that when you study the scriptures. But I've kind of, this portion of scripture, I'll read it here in just a second. But I've kind of laid it out. And let me just go ahead and read. Chapter 18, we'll begin in verse 27. And it came to pass, when David was come to Mahanaim, that Shobai, the son of Nahash, of Reba, of the children of Amnon, and Machir, the son of... That's not it. Where are we at? That's 17. You're right, Christine. I'll get where I'm going. Verse 32. And the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered, the enemies of my lord the king and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt be as that young man is. And the king was much moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, thus he said, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son. chapter 19. And it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people. For the people heard say that that day how the king was grieved for his son. And the people got them by stealth that day into the city, his people being ashamed, steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son. And Joab came into the house to the king and said, Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life, and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters, and the lives of thy wives, and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived, and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Now, therefore, arise, go forth, and speak comfortably unto the servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night, and that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. Then the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told unto all the people, saying, Behold, the king doth sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king, for Israel had fled every man to his tent. Now, I kind of separated this out, and it does divide out fairly easily. But this first portion where Cushai comes, it's good news and bad news. David gets the news that we have the victory, but the bad news is that Absalom was dead. And then the second portion, and the king was much moved. There's a conflict of interest here. The bad news affects David in such a manner. And then when Joab reproves the king, you realize how unusual that is. Here you have someone who's subservient, someone who is a subject of the king, superseding the king. And we'll look at how precarious that is. But David here, of course, we're in sympathy with him, studying David. And we see how the event was supercharged with emotions. David obviously loved Absalom. But again, some of his emotional outburst. And again, in looking at David and looking at his character and looking at his past performances, he had to know that there was a possibility that Absalom would be killed. He took every precaution there was, I know. He told his commanders not to touch him. All of the men, all of the people heard that. And of course, the men that were under these commanders were much more hesitant to do what Joab carried out in what I would say murdering Absalom and making it look like it was a casualty of war. But at the same time, David had to be aware of that. So these mixed emotions here, it led me to think that possibly David had some aspirations for this young man, Absalom, that he was confident he was going to put down this insurrection because Absalom was inexperienced. The men that were fighting with him would not have been as experienced as the men that were with David. And even though they had a smaller force, they had the advantage of fighting where David wanted to fight. So as well, I wonder, and this is just my own supposition, if David did not have in mind at some time in the future to hand over the kingdom to Absalom. And I think it could have been easily done. I think he could have defeated Absalom and then just kind of delayed what Absalom tried to do for himself and try to persuade Absalom, just wait a few years, son, and you'll have the kingdom. I think David preferred. And that's where we get into a little bit of a conflict of interest, because we find even in David's outburst of emotions that there is some conflict even with God. That was not God's will. God's will was not for Absalom, who is a type of the Antichrist, and we haven't talked about that a lot in the studies here, but Absalom being a type of the Antichrist would not be the type of person, and we'll look at, if we have time at the end, we'll look at exactly who Absalom was a little bit. But I couldn't help but read the portion here and look at Joab, and I'm not dealing with Cushai as much as these two men, but Joab and David. And I could not help but look at David and think of the verse in Job where Elihu makes the statement, great men are not always wise. And I looked at David a little bit in light of that. David does not make a lot of wise decisions after his sin with Bathsheba. And, of course, we know God has prophesied by Nathan that the sword is not going to leave his house. So we realize that some of this is a result of God's dealing and chastising David. But as we see, no one can deny that David is a great man. I don't think secular historian would say that David was not a great man. Great king. The greatest of all kings, I don't know. Greatest of all kings of Israel, I don't know. He'd have to compete with Solomon, who had by far more wisdom, according to the scriptures themselves. But he did deal wisely when, from the time that we meet him as a shepherd boy, he was obedient to his father. He went into the battle. He was a courageous young man, but he ran from Saul. He wouldn't touch God's anointed. But Absalom is nowhere near the stature that Saul was, in the sense that Absalom is not anointed by God. David is the rightful king. And therefore, throughout his life, his rank, everything that happened to him was a result of the wisdom that he exercised in his life. And that wisdom came from God. And obviously we know that because of his son. Solomon's wisdom came from God. We know that wisdom comes from God. But great men are not always wise. I don't know. I tried to think this week if I know any great men. I'm sorry tonight if you're here and I know you. You think you're a great man. I didn't have you in mind. But I tried to think if I really know any great men. And I couldn't come up with anyone that stood out like David would as being. I know some good men, but I don't know any really great men to kind of see and compare and see. But I'd have to admit, none of us make wise decisions all the time. And sometimes we do. We do think we're pretty great. We think we're pretty good. We think we're pretty smart. But none of us make wise decisions all the time. So I make mistakes all the time. And we suffer for those mistakes. But David had the blessing of God. And I couldn't help but consider Joab as well, because he plays a great role in David's recovery here. And I don't think I would place him in the category of great men. I didn't know him personally, and I can only kind of surmise what kind of an individual he was by the events that I find in the scriptures. And if I have time, we'll go through some of those. But I don't think I would place him in the category of being a great man. He was mighty. In that sense, he was David's right-hand man. He was in command of David's armies. But he was wise. Well, you find in his life, he's doing the wise thing, but not in the sense that David is doing a wise thing or Solomon is doing a wise thing in a godly sense. We never find Joab calling upon God the way David did. There's no Psalms written by Joab. He's probably not a very good singer. He's basically known for killing people. He would really come in handy for a king who had to have somebody killed. And of course, we know that David did use him in that manner. David needed a fighting man. The way Joab got his job was they were challenged at Jerusalem, and Joab was the first one on the wall. He was zealous for his king. He was zealous for David. He loved David. So their lives are intertwined. But he was wise in a worldly sense. I've got to admit that in this passage that we read, he does the right thing by confronting David. Dangerous. Dangerous. Kind of putting his life on the line. But then again, I'm not sure how he felt about that. But he was a murderer. The Bible tells us in 2 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 30. Joab and Abishai, his brother, slew Abner because he had slain their brother Asahel at Gibeon in the battle. Now, most of you are familiar enough with the scriptures that you know that battle took place between Abner and Joab and a few fighting men. It's interesting the wording there that they said, you know, they were going to let the men play. And I suppose they probably didn't think it was going to get as far as it did, that actually somebody was going to bleed and die. Maybe somebody would bleed. If I know fighting men, if I know professional soldiers, they're not afraid of bleeding. They're not afraid of dying for the most part. But I don't think they thought that somebody was going to get killed that day. But the But the minute somebody did, and one of those was Azahel, Joab's brother, and you find out later on that Joab never gets over that. Joab and Abishai, his brother, slew Abner because he had slain their brother Azahel at Gibeon in the battle. And Azahel, like a lot of men who like to fight, just didn't know enough to quit. He was trying to chase down Abner, and Abner just had a few tricks in his pocket that Azahel had never seen. And as a result, he wound up dead that day. A little inexperienced on the field of battle, picked on the wrong guy. I don't know if you've ever done that before, but the fellow that picked on Brother Marshall the other night. Yes, picked on the wrong guy, didn't you, brother? And all of us have probably, you men at least, I don't know about you ladies, you can probably handle anybody, but some of the men know what I'm talking about when you pick on the wrong guy and you learn a very valuable lesson. So great would not be a word that I would naturally associate with Joab. He was a killer. He was a mercenary, possibly. And I might even say that he was a murderer because of the death of Abner. And again, wielding some worldly wisdom, but not the wisdom that is spiritual, not the wisdom from above, not the wisdom that you and I need to concern ourselves with. But let's look now at the passage here. A little bit of background on Joab, a little bit on David. And in 2 Samuel 18:31, and behold, Cushai came, and Cushai said, "Tidings, my lord the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee." And the king said unto Cushai, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" And Cushai answered, "The enemies of my lord the king and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt be as that young man is." Now, Cushai plays a minor role in this whole thing. He's just a runner with a message. And last week, I thought about Ahimeaz. Why didn't Joab just give him the message? Some have postulated that Cushai's name indicates that he was an Ethiopian, possibly even a servant or slave, maybe a, what do we want to say, a proselyte to Israel, to the Jewish religion. But anyway, he was being used in a sense. And I just thought, well, why didn't Joab just give Ahimeaz the message? He wanted to run. He knew he could run. And I thought, well, I think it's because Joab knew David. Because Joab knew that when David got word that Abner was dead, and of course, Joab had a hand in that, in 2 Samuel 3 and verse 39 again, David says, "I am this day weak, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zeruiah, be too hard for me. The Lord shall reward the doer of evil according to his wickedness." And Joab knew that when David got word of Saul and Jonathan's death, and of course the messenger there kind of elaborated a little bit, we believe, possibly had something to do with it, thought that he would ingratiate himself to David, and David had him slain. When Ishbosheth, who was the son of Saul, when one sought to set him up as king, and those two fellows went in and took his head off and brought it to David, David had them killed because they were murderers. Now somehow Joab escaped all of this judgment that David meted out. And it wasn't that David couldn't be merciful, and I'm sure Joab knew that, but I believe Joab made his decision based on that, and I had to say, well, okay, he does have somewhat of a conscience, somewhat. He could not guarantee the safety of Ahimeaz if he took the message, and he was the priest's son. And there must have been some sentiment there on the part of Joab. So instead he would send Cushai, and I say Cushai was expendable. If David wanted to kill Cushai, he'd just get another runner. Just, if you know what I mean. Sometimes we think we're pretty valuable, but hey, listen, he's gone. Just bring somebody else in. All we need is 98.6 if he's breathing. If he can fog a mirror, he'll do. And of course, that was before, you know, the popularization of the saying, "Don't shoot me, I'm only the messenger. Don't shoot me, I'm only the piano player. Don't shoot me, I'm only the preacher." That wasn't popular at that time. So I think Joab sent Cushai for that reason. He couldn't guarantee the safety, and this was, and he knew it, dangerous business. He didn't know how far the king would inquire. And of course, David was so stricken with grief that he didn't inquire other than that Absalom was dead. And then in verse 32, and the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? That's all that David seemed to be interested in. He glossed over the fact that the victory had come. But Cushai is very careful in the message that he brought. And I noted that he noted the victory, the good news first, which is always a good thing. Good news first, bad news last, if you're interested in psychology. For the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee. And to me, Cushai let David know in that message that the Lord gave you the victory. The Lord gave you the victory. David had to know about that. The only reason David was king is because God gave him the victory. From the time that we meet David, God gave him the victory. In the Psalms, if you will, turn to Psalm chapter 3, or Psalm 3, and we'll read a few of these. You see, I don't think David was necessarily unprepared for death at a time of battle. I think he had to know it was a possibility. But I do think he knew he was going to win. He knew he was going to put down this insurrection. Psalm 3 and verse 1. This is David. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. Selah. I am sure the nation of Israel that day, Absalom himself, was so full of pride that he thought he could destroy David because of the numbers. There just wasn't any way. If they surrounded him, they had him. In fact, if he had stayed in Jerusalem, one of the thoughts that I had, David could have been trapped. They could have laid siege to the city. And Absalom might have had a better chance. But again, psychological warfare. When Absalom walks into Jerusalem, do you think he thought it was going to be that easy? Wow. It probably was almost a little bit of an eerie feeling. But he also had to know, and if you want to get inside his head, David, what would you do? David's still alive. And as long as David is still alive, he is a threat. I don't care how old he is. I don't care how young you are, Absalom. David is a threat as long as he's alive, and Absalom knew that. And that's why he took the careful counsel that he did. Verse 2, many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. I laid down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people. You know, I dare say if we penned something like this, our hands would be shaking because we don't have the experience that David had. David is writing out of experience. Thousands of men wanted him dead at one time or another. Saul, the most powerful man in Israel that he knew of, wanted him dead, and he survived. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that set themselves against me round about. Why? Because of verse 7. Arise, O Lord, save me. God had saved David time and time and time and time again. And David had repaid God with these psalms. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people. Selah. Psalm 18. Turn a few pages more. Psalm 18. I mean, it would be one thing if David only wrote one of these. But there are numerous psalms where David is talking about the protective hand of God. The Lord is my rock, verse 2, and my fortress. David didn't need Jerusalem. He didn't need a fort. He had the rock. And my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my buckler and the horn of my salvation and my high tower. I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from mine enemies. David did not lose. David couldn't lose as long as God was with him. And I don't think David sensed that God wasn't with him. Listen, even after the sin of Bathsheba, God spared his life. Sure, he gave the prophecy that the sword was going to be on his family forever. But David's life was spared, and I think even as he fled, he knew God was with him. He sensed that God was with him. He was still confident in God. Psalm 35. The only difference is I don't hear David calling on God. I'm not saying that he didn't. I don't know of any psalms that were written at this time. Maybe there are a couple. Possible. I don't know that we can place those that carefully. But I don't hear David calling on God here. I don't hear David seeking God. He's got his plan. He's working in it. And I would say everything has gone according to David's plan up until he gets this bad news. Because in his plan was Joab, the other two commanders, you see to it that the young man is brought to me alive. See, it doesn't make sense. You'd want your enemies dead. These prayers all line up with that. God is answering his prayers whenever he gets in one of these conflicts. Psalm 35, verse 1. Plead my cause, O Lord, with them that strive with me. Fight against them that fight against me. Take hold of shield and buckler and stand up for mine help. Draw out also the spear and stop the way against them that persecute me. Say unto my soul, I am thy salvation. And I've got a little note here. Be careful what you pray for. You don't know when God's going to answer that prayer. You don't know what the circumstances might be. Are you like me? Have you gotten down and prayed at some time or other in your Christian life? And you prayed something and you meant it and you maybe even were a little bit like David here in distress, being threatened. But God didn't answer the prayer the way you thought it was. It didn't come out exactly. And you had to go to God. I know I have on several occasions since. Now, you know, God, that is not what I meant. You know, that is not how I prayed. Well, I guess I didn't go into enough detail. But you know, that is not what was in my heart. And all you get from the Lord at those times is I answered your prayer. I did what you wanted. This is what you asked me. This is what I wanted. Well, but I wanted it here. Well, you didn't say that. Well, I wanted it done in this. Well, you didn't say that. And I chose to do it here and now and with this individual. See, David didn't know in the future when he's writing those prayers, these psalms, that sooner or later Absalom would be the enemy. God is simply answering David's prayers that he has systematically prayed over a number of years. David wasn't upset with any other time when God answered his prayers, but this time, see the conflict of interest. David, double-minded man, it says in James, is unstable in all his ways. The instability of David at this time is incredible, is it not? The decisions he makes, some of them don't seem very wise. In verse 6, let their way be dark and slippery. Let the angel of the Lord persecute them. For without cause have they hid for me their net in a pit, which without cause they have digged for my soul. Let destruction come upon him at unawares, and let his net that he hath hid catch himself into that very destruction. Let him fall. And then verse 9 of that very psalm, as a result of God giving him the victory, here's what David says. And my soul shall be joyful in the Lord. It shall rejoice in his salvation. Now, David's not praying about a home in heaven. David's not praying about eternal life. David's praying about God defeating his enemies for him. He just never thought that Absalom, he never thought one of his sons, he never thought that one of his favorite sons, possibly even, and it's conjecture, the next king of Israel, David's choice, possibly, would be the enemy. And he would not be able to be joyful. David is anything but joyful. He's praying for victory over his enemies, and he cannot find joy in it. Instead, David's only concerned about his own will. And that's a concern for us when we pray. That's a concern for us, I think, when we become overcome by emotion at times. You see the conflict of interest? It's not, I told my commanders not to harm Absalom. David realizes that God defeated my enemies. My enemy was Absalom. Irregardless of how much I loved him, he's dead. David is up against God. Incredible. David sends as well as receives a message here. In heaven, it's clear that David is not pleased with the will of God. Oh, Absalom, my son. He's not crying out to God. He's just crying. God knows Absalom's dead. God killed him. He used Joab, cruel instrument. God can do that. He uses Satan. He uses the devil. He uses the nations and the armies of this world to work his will. All things work together for good. He's working things out for us all the time. But sometimes he uses instruments of wrath like Joab. He had asked, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered, the enemies of my lord the king and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as that young man is dead. And instead of rejoicing, when David brought the ark into Jerusalem, he rejoiced. When David got the victory over Goliath, when David went out to battle and the nation of Israel defeated their enemies, David rejoiced in the Lord. But this time it's different. Now David is draped in the shadow of death that he wrote about in Psalm 23. Now he is shrouded in sorrow. And his heart cannot help but say what's in there. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Would to God that I had died instead of Absalom. And let me just add this. That would have made Absalom the king, wouldn't it? I'm telling you, if the depth of his emotion went so deep as to say that I would have given my own life and my own son would have been king, there's a possibility that that is exactly what David's will was, but not God's. But not God's. A warning to us all, I suppose, that God would allow such a thing. I don't know if you have experienced this, but I've been shocked a time or two to think that God would do that. God would allow this to happen. God would allow that to happen. And of course, my answer to that is, why not? Why not? God did not prevent David from sinning. Why would he prevent Joab if Joab was murdering Absalom? And of course, that is the way I see it. And in verse 33, the Bible says, and the king was much moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept as he went. Thus he said, oh, my son, Absalom, my son, my son, Absalom, would God I had died for thee. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. I'm reminded of Joseph when he was reunited with his brothers down in Egypt and he put every man out. But the whole house heard Joseph weeping because he was being reconciled to his brothers. I'm reminded as well of David when he lost the illegitimate son that he had with Bathsheba. He fasted, he prayed for several days. But to me, that seems like a formality. There was no depth of emotion and expression the way he has here. Absalom was a grown man that David loved. That child, I believe David knew from the start that there would be some difficulty that God probably would, in his justice, take that child. And the king was much moved. But I have a note here that says, but God was not. God was not. Again, it's hard for us to think of God in those terms. Someone dies. We're moved. But God is not. Not moved at all. He had the power to raise him up. He could. be difficult with a whole bunch of rocks on you in a pit, but he could. But it ain't happening. David knows that. This is one of the most pathetic statements in Scripture, I think, with the power to move us. I don't think you can read that and not feel what David is feeling. I don't have a son. I got a couple of daughters, but I don't have a son. But I sense what David is feeling. I mean, the noise of battle he was used to, the possibility of dying, the risk that you take with your life in a battle, the sound, the fury, all of it. But when he gets the news that Absalom is dead, it's like somebody detonated a bomb inside of him, and his whole soul and mind and spirit, like a huge explosion, just went off inside him. Can you sense that? You've seen enough television, movies like that. Tom Cruise movie, you know, where they blow everything up. That going on inside. Maybe you've experienced something like that. Maybe you've lost a son or a daughter. Grief is a natural response. But we find as well in private. We grieve in private for the most part. We don't really want people to know how grieved we are quite often. I know I'm a private individual. I wouldn't necessarily want to make an expression like this, but David cannot help himself. He's driven. It's perceived as a slight, but it's David's sorrow. The people interpret it in a different manner. I remember when my own dad died, and that was suddenly. We didn't expect it. My mom was already in a nursing home. And so that hit pretty hard, much the same way as this did. I could not believe it. And I grieved for a while that night when we went down to see him and take care of some arrangements the next day. I did grieve that night. But because my dad had asked me to preach the funeral and we had to make arrangements, there have been several times when I've told people I never really grieved the way most people do over a period of time for my mom and my dad. My mom, we were expecting it over a period of years. She got worse. But the reason I didn't was because I was going to have to preach a funeral. And I wasn't just going to get up and throw the Bible open and say, okay, bless God. I wanted to honor my father. I wanted to honor my mother. And I knew that was going to take some time, some meditation, and you only have a couple of days. David had forgotten that he was a king. David was so absorbed in the fact that he was a father that he forgot that he was a king. And it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. Now, Joab was still receiving messages. Put yourself in Joab's place. You killed the king's son, and he's up here crying day and night. The people are coming back into the city. The Bible says here that he put a covering over his face. David has no idea what's going on in the kingdom. Joab is in charge. But I'm telling you that he's getting messages now back and forth. Why? Because he wants to know the condition of the king. Because if the king finds out Joab's part in the death of Absalom, he knows what a precarious situation he's in. So he's listening to every scrap of information that comes out of the house where David is. In case the tables turn, Joab's wise, worldly wise. He's already got a plan figured out. The message that Cushai delivered did not have the details of the murder of Absalom. But there was always the possibility that David would find out. And I don't believe Joab wanted the king to know. He didn't want him to know about the cruelty. He did not want David to find that out. Did David know? I don't know. If he did find out, he was merciful toward Joab. But then another pathetic statement here affecting us. Chapter 19 and verse 1. It was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people. David's emotion carried some weight in the kingdom to the point where the whole kingdom would rather mourn with David than enjoy the victory. And I mean, they were primed for the victory. This is like World War II. This is like some of the incidents in American history where celebrations took place. And Joab comes into the house to the king. And I'm not going to read it for sake of time here, but he reads the king the riot act. He alerts David to his responsibilities as a king. Because Joab is using his head. For some reason, I can't see Joab doing these things for the sake of the nation of Israel, but more for himself. If the king goes down, he loses power. Politics. You know, when you read the stories of David, you don't think about the intrigue, the drama, everything that's going on around David. Joab's, these people are vying for, like Washington, the wickedness that is there in the hearts of individuals. Joab goes boldly, if we could say so. I almost think it took more courage to go in and talk to the king the way Joab did than it did at times to face some of the enemy that he faced. Authorities don't like to be told like this. Especially absolute authorities do not like to be dressed down. Now, obviously, it's in private. We are encouraged in Hebrews 4. Let us therefore come boldly under the throne of grace. But it's so that we may obtain mercy. Joab's not asking for mercy. Joab is telling the king what to do. That's why I say this subject of the king supersedes the king. He knows what to do. He's been thinking about it. He hasn't been wallowing in sorrow. He's shaming the king to the point of threatening him, giving him ultimatums that could not sit well with anyone other than the king David, who does show mercy to him and not having him killed. So I see Joab as a wise counselor, as a soldier, as a military strategist. He knew when and where to strike. He knew what to do. The timing was perfect. David was weak. He knew he could take advantage of that. But he also knew what to tell the king. He knew what the king needed to do to save the kingdom for himself. And David could not see it. David could not bring himself. But as a result of this speech, David finds the strength to sit in the gate and the kingdom is saved. If the kingdom can be saved, Joab knows there's a debt of gratitude owed to the man that helped save it. And he knows he is, at this point, that man. Even though David might be upset with him about the manner in which he spoke to him, he knew David would remember. Joab would probably remind him on occasion that if it weren't for me, you wouldn't even have a kingdom. And then there's, we could go on ad infinitum, we don't have enough time, but there are just a couple more things. And I want to point out something here. We need to see the big picture. And obviously the big picture is that God is chastising David. If you go back to 2 Samuel chapter 12, Nathan there is saying, "Now therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house, never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me and hast taken the wife of Uriah Hittite to be thy wife. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house, and I will take thy wives before thine eyes and give unto thy neighbor, and he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of the sun." We know all this took place when Absalom rebelled. And in Hebrews we find, "My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him." We're told that our position is to take a rebuke of the Lord. Now, David did not have these scriptures to relate to, but he did have his experience with God. And David could take a rebuke from God, could he not? Psalm 51 is a result of Nathan rebuking him in his sin there with Bathsheba. In Job chapter 5, it says, "Behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore, despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty, for he maketh sore and bindeth up, he woundeth, and his hands make whole." But David will go through this process over and over and over again. And he knows it because God meant what he said, never depart out of. Now, I said we could speculate, we could psychoanalyze, we could do these character studies ad infinitum. But I just want to point out one thing, or a couple of things here, and we'll be done. I found this poem, Retribution. Though the mills of God grind slowly, yet they grind exceeding small, though with patience he stands waiting, with exactness grinds he all. Longfellow wrote that. And it reminds me of this. But one thing I found when I was just looking at some things here, something stood out to me. These men, Joab, David, Absalom, they're all murderers. If we think of the greatness of David, we don't think of David as being a murderer. That's not what comes to our mind. All the stories of his courage, the fact that he was a king, yes. Joab murdered Abner, avenging the death of his brother. He was cruel in other aspects. The death of Absalom was cruel. He could have taken him a prisoner. He could have spared his life, but he didn't. And I was reminded that Absalom did burn Joab's fields. There might have been a little vindictiveness there. David, of course, was a murderer, but he didn't murder the same way Joab did. He used Joab to murder Uriah. And when it came time to get even with Joab, David used Solomon. And Solomon learned the lesson of David, his father, because he used Benaiah. Solomon didn't dirty his hands, neither did David. They used somebody else, but they still were murderers. And, of course, Absalom avenged the rape of his sister with the death of his brother. Murderer. And beyond that, he was willing to kill his own father for the kingdom. Now, with that, I'm done.